Hello, listeners. Welcome to the UXR podcast brought to you by the UXR Collective with your host, Emily Hudnick. That's right, things are looking a little different around here. We hope you enjoy the new name as the podcast, for the most part, stays the same. By changing our name to the UXR podcast, we want to better serve you, our listeners, who are from around the world, not just Toronto. Like many other popular UX-related communities, we want to provide insight and value to you no matter where you are in the world. Our headquarters as the UXR Collective are still in Toronto, but the insights you gain from this podcast will be useful to you wherever you are. There's no better way to get involved with the UXR Collective than to join us at our monthly meetups or even at our conference that's happening in June of 2019. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of this podcast, but I wanted to mention it because our discussion at this month's meetup is about breaking silos and collaborating during UX research. UX research is a team sport, as we all know, and getting stakeholders involved early is the key to turning your research findings into impactful solutions. And these stakeholders can be from around the business, whether they're from developers or from the business or from other designers and videographers and people that you need during your research process. With that in mind, our theme for this episode is going to be UX research and business. Our first discussion today will be about an article from McKinsey called The Business Value of Design. It's by Benedict Shepherd, Hugo Sarrazin, Garen Kuyumjian, and Fabricio Dore. You can find it on the McKinsey website at mckinsey.com and search The Business Value of Design. While they do discuss design at length here, I've interpreted it as both design and research, because they do say that it's becoming increasingly challenging to create amazing customer experiences and only the best stand out, and creating great products and customer experiences is profitable. But it's challenging to do consistently, and the only way that we can make extremely amazing customer experiences is if we do that research. Speaking of which, from extensive research conducted by McKinsey, they've determined that the best design performers increase their revenues and shareholder returns at nearly twice the rate of their industry counterparts. And by design, I believe they really mean customer experiences, because if something is well designed, you're going to get an amazing customer experience. An analysis of over 100,000 design actions collected unveiled 12 actions showing the greatest correlation with improved financial performance and clustered them into four broad themes. So there's four themes that they've come up with that really tie to these 12 actions that show the greatest correlation to improved financial performance in your company. And I'll be discussing two of those themes, but definitely check out the other two because they could be just as applicable to what you're doing in your company and how you can create an even bigger impact in how great your company does. Again, those are at mckinsey.com, and the title of the article is The Business Value of Design. In their overall findings, they found that the top scorers in this McKinsey Design Index that they've created increased their revenues and total returns to shareholders substantially faster than their industry counterparts did over a five-year period, about 32 percentage points of higher revenue growth and 56 percentage points higher total returns to shareholders growth for the period as a whole. That is crazy. That is insane. And the results held true in all three of the industries that they looked at: medical technology, consumer goods, and retail banking. This is an obvious statement that they've created, but I think we all know this intrinsically as UX researchers, because it suggests that no matter what your company focuses on, even if it's a digital product or service or an actual physical good, good design really matters and it will really impact your profitability. So the great thing about research today is that we can so much more easily than before tap into our real customers' wants and needs, as well as their pain points and what they're struggling with, faster and sometimes even in real time. The market disproportionately rewards companies that truly stand out from the crowd. So by leveraging all of these tools that we have at our fingertips as researchers, we can place the user at the heart of the business and at all of the business decisions in a way that design leaders have long craved. A lot of companies, including the one that I'm working at, always say that they are putting the customer at the center of everything that they do, but the ones that actually have this in their DNA are the ones who disproportionately have insane success and returns to their shareholders. So if research is so easy to do, or at least it's very easy for us to tap into our customers, and it's so profitable for companies, as seen by the research done by McKinsey, everyone must be doing it, right? Well, unfortunately not. Over 40% of the companies that they surveyed still aren't talking to their end users during development. I can almost hear the internal screams of all of the UX researchers who are listening to this right now. Just over 50% of these companies admitted that they have no objective way to assess or set targets for the output of their design teams. With no clear way to link design and great experiences to business health, senior leaders are often reluctant to divert scarce resources to design functions, as McKinsey says in their article. There's still plenty of need for us to advocate for the users, and there are still many ways that we need to bridge this gap between having these insights and directly tying them to the business and how well the business is doing. We need to show that as researchers and as designers in some cases, that what we do actually greatly impacts how the business is doing and whether or not they're going to greatly succeed and stand out and be a thought leader in their industry, or whether they will be left behind as someone else does it. A great indicator of whether a company is going to be one of the ones that blows everyone else out of the water and has these amazing returns on investment as well as profit margins is if the leadership is actually bought in and is well integrated into the process. A question that you can ask yourself is, are there UX researchers at the very top of your organization, or even designers who are pushing forward this vision? For most people, the answer is no, which is a solid reason why the user experience, and therefore the products or services that your company offers, aren't nearly as great as they could be. And you probably know this as a UX researcher if you see it every day. The insights that you're gathering and the things that you're putting forward to the business to show that this will greatly impact them can't get high enough if the people who are at the top don't understand them, or maybe they haven't been integrated into what it's really like to gain these insights and how useful they are. The companies with the best financial returns have combined design and business leadership through a bold design-centric vision that clearly embedded in the deliberations of their top teams. When the opposite happens, which is pretty common, designers and researchers don't have metrics or goals defined by their leadership, and so they turn into a mystery box. People are putting their resources and time into them, but they might not know what they're getting out of it, and they don't know how to measure what they're putting out there to how well the business is doing. It's not enough to have fine words stapled to the executive walls either. Some companies don't talk the talk or walk the walk. They just talk and it doesn't match up to what they're actually doing inside the company. Companies that perform the best in this area, according to McKinsey, maintain a baseline level of customer understanding among all executives. These companies also have a leadership level curiosity about what users need, as opposed to what they say they want, which is very key. One top team that McKinsey interviewed invites customers to its regular monthly meeting solely to discuss the merits of its products and services. The CEO of one of the world's largest banks spends a day a month with the bank's clients and encourages all members of the C-suite to do the same. Through personal exposure or constant engagement with researchers, executives can act as role models for their businesses and learn firsthand what most frustrates and excites customers. And imagine if they did that, and it was coming from top down that we really needed to fix whatever these customers were having issues with. Imagine your CEO sitting down with some people in the call centers and listening in on what people are calling in about and really understanding the fundamental problems that some people have with your services and your products. I think there would be a pretty big eye-opener for some of these people, and it might drastically change the way that they go about doing their research or what they really expect from the design coming out of it. And in an age of ubiquitous online tools and data-driven customer feedback, McKinsey says, it seems surprising that design isn't measured with the same rigor as time or costs. Companies can now build design metrics, such as satisfaction ratings and usability assessments, into product specifications, just as they include requirements for grades of materials or target times to market. And what McKinsey means by this is there should be a base level for satisfaction, and there should be regular usability assessments that continually measure how well their product or service is providing a great experience. And if it dips or if things are going wrong, then that needs to be fixed just as much as a material not working as well as it should be, or a time to market coming in a little bit late. It should be just as important that the thing is created on time as it is the thing is a joy to use and is actually solving a customer need. How many entrepreneurs go out into the world thinking that they've created a great product, and they go through the entire phase or year and a half of development, and then by the time they go out into the market, they realize that no one actually needs their solution? That's quite a few more than you might think. Or maybe you've seen them on Shark Tank when they get blown out of the water by the sharks for saying that this is a crazy idea and that no one would ever use it. Just imagine how different their lives would be and how much different their business would be if they actually went and talked to these customers. Even more importantly, imagine if their leaders or the leaders of these gigantic corporations did the same thing that researchers are doing on a daily basis and actually took the time to integrate these metrics and also this attitude of creating a great user experience from the top down. The user experience is another theme that the companies who outperform everyone else consistently deliver on compared to their competitors. Top quartile companies embrace the full user experience. They break down internal barriers among the physical and the digital and service design. The importance of user centricity, like I was saying before, demands a broad-based view of where design can make a difference. It's now not just focusing on your service or on your product. It's about the entire experience end-to-end that really sets you apart. It can be the difference between delighting your customer because they feel like you truly actually understand what your pain points are and what your needs are, from something that is just more run-of-the-mill and is a baseline expectation that's being met. Design-driven companies shouldn't limit themselves to their own ecosystems. The best businesses that they interviewed think more broadly, they said. For example, mobile payment services like Google Pay and Apple Pay were the result of a willingness to think across boundaries to devise easier ways to access cash. A piece of plastic in your wallet is one solution, but how much easier is it to use a device you already carry in your pocket? McKinsey outlines. And that's true. You might not think that Apple would ever really need to become a wallet on top of all of the things that their iPhones already do for you, but they were thinking outside of the realm of just what their company is doing and just what a phone can do, and devising ways that the phone can become even more useful and delightful to use and allowing it to solve even more problems that sit outside of just what a phone might traditionally do for you. So, as I said before, These are two of the four themes that they go over in this article, and it shows that great businesses and their performance really comes down to leadership and user experience, as well as the other two themes. They explore the topic more in depth in their article, and you should definitely check it out to see how your research and the designs that you inform, or maybe are even doing yourself, can really have a bigger business impact and maybe give an indication on how much better they could be for your company. One of the great things about UXRTO is that there's a Slack group where people can post things like articles, events, they can ask for help and advice, and they can also post jobs and opportunities for UX researchers in Toronto and beyond in our Jobs and Gigs channel. The awesome thing about that is that people who are posting them sometimes are actually the people who are looking to hire, so you can contact them directly and discuss it and ask them what they're looking for, and also make sure that you are the best person on their list by talking to them directly through Slack. An example of this is Nicholas Wu, who is looking for a UXR co-op / intern for the winter term at CIBC. And he says, if you'd like to learn more or apply, please contact me. And that was posted on November 8th. Anita Sedgwick, who is also looking for a freelance design researcher, one who has a solid product background, has posted in our Slack group. She says, DM me if you're interested in working with complexity, multiple design challenges, growing transformation work. Central location, # UX research. Another internship opportunity, or actually many, many of them that are now open in summer 2019, are at Google, and they could be all around the world, but they look like they're mostly in the US. For example, they have a user experience research intern, and they're looking for someone who's currently pursuing a BS, MS, or PhD degree in human-computer interaction, cognitive psychology, information science, statistics, data science, or a related field. And they're looking for someone who is interested in conducting user research in the field, and they have relevant internship work, work experience, or project experience in an applied research setting, including, but not limited to, integrating user research into product designs and practices. The cool thing about Google is that when you apply to one, you apply to all of them. So you could apply to work in Mountain View, California, in Seattle, in San Francisco, in Kirkland, in San Bruno, in the London, UK, or in any number of other areas that they have openings for. They also do have user experience design intern positions. Some of them look old because it says summer 2018, but then they also say that they were posted 3 days ago. So not sure what's going on there, but looks like there's a lot of opportunities. You can go on careers.google.com and look under jobs and search UX, and all of these things will come up for you in that search, and you can easily just apply from there. If you're looking for a more senior position, perhaps, a senior user researcher is being vetted at Hootsuite in Vancouver, Canada, if you are interested in going over to BC. At Hootsuite, our user research team inspires change through robust, rich, and actionable insights that fuel every stage of the product development lifecycle, they said. They're looking for someone who would be an associate, so someone who has a lot of experience but isn't necessarily super senior. So they're looking for someone who has distilling complicated situations in their repertoire and effectively influencing beyond your individual contributions. They're also looking for someone who can collaborate closely with Hootsuite's data lab team to obtain and generate data-driven insights, which are very important. You also, of course, will have to share your findings, insights, and recommendations with product designers, product managers, and developers, helping to create a more informed and empathetic product team. If you have more than 7 years of experience conducting primary research in a professional setting, then this might be the job for you. definitely search up Hootsuite under Senior User Researcher to look at that one. Similarly, OpenText in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada is looking for a senior UX researcher. And OpenText is the information company. They say their mission at OpenText is to create software solutions and deliver services that define the future of digital. Be a part of a winning team that leads the way in enterprise information management. They're looking for someone who's great at supporting product management, participating in customer site visits, beta test visits, customer briefings, customer councils, identifying and creating user personas and scenarios. They're looking for someone who has more than 8 years working in usability testing, including recruiting screening, behavioral and performance observations, etc., an advanced degree in psych, cognitive psych, experimental psych, or human factors, strong analytical and problem-solving skills, and an excellent facilitator, listener, communicator, and team player. That one you can also find on LinkedIn, and it was only posted 2 days ago, so definitely check that out, because Waterloo is great. I went to school there, and OpenText has a great reputation for being quite an awesome company, so check those out. That will be the wrap-up for job postings. We will jump into one last article before we sign off. As the year comes to a close, as we're a little more than halfway into November, I know you're starting to think of the holidays and maybe even the new year. Your workplace may be readying themselves for new projects, or your classes will start up again come January, and it might feel like you'll get a fresh start after the new year celebrations. One of my favorite things to do, besides reflecting on all I've accomplished in the past year, is to look to the future and see what it'll hold for both me personally and professionally. What will UX research look like in 2019? What will be the trends we see as the world around us keeps changing and the expectations of customers and users keep evolving? Trendwatcher.com, which offers free insights into trends happening in the world of business, as well as premium insights for businesses and industries, might be able to help you answer some of those questions, or even solidify the hypothesis you've been creating in your mind this year as you watch how things are changing and how different companies are setting themselves apart, maybe even in your industry. Five Trends for 2019 is an article on trendwatching.com that has some very interesting ideas on what we'll be seeing more of in 2019 and how your business can respond to them and come out ahead. These, more specifically, are consumer insights, and they could tell the tale of what your customers will be expecting from you in the new year. The really cool thing about this is that the examples in this article are companies who are already setting themselves apart and really making a name for themselves by doing these things, but it doesn't mean that it's too late for you or that your business can't also fold themselves into these trends and really set themselves apart from their competitors. So here are the five trends. We'll be talking about two as per the theme in this podcast. And you can read the rest on trendwatching.com. And again, the article is called Five Trends for 2019. The first trend is legislative brands. Progressive consumers will welcome the law of the brand. The second one is lab rats. Why an extreme test and fixed mindset is the future of wellness. Number three is open source solutions, a bold new frontier for sustainability. Number four is superhuman resources. It's time for our emerging AI overlords to play fair. And finally, number five is fantasy IRL, imagined and real worlds collide in the name of play. The first one that I want to talk about is lab rats. The lab rats trend, according to trendwatching.com, we'll see human wellness and lifestyle as an engineering problem to be solved. This outlook, with its origins in Silicon Valley, will see rising numbers enthusiastically apply a test and fix approach to optimizing their health and lifestyle outcomes. This trend has been going on for a while, if you think about it, and it's a really interesting cognitive shift in how people view themselves and their diet and their overall wellness.
we're all in some capacity or another looking to become more healthy, and this trend really focuses in on it in a different way than we've seen before. It's not so much about your willpower and your feelings, it's about the data and the insights you can gather from what your body is doing and telling you without you even realizing it. For example, things like Apple Health and Fitbit have made millions of people increasingly aware of their health metrics and stoked the desire to be in control. Things like knowing exactly how many steps you've taken today, or what your blood pressure is like, or how your heart rate increases or decreases throughout the day. Whichever sector you're in, focusing on empowering your customers to understand, control, test, and fix every aspect of their experience, and you'll speak to the new expectations at the heart of the lab rats trend. There are a few reasons why 2019 will be the tipping point for lab rats, and that's because people are more and more getting used to the fact that they can hone in on any sort of data that they need, and they can get increasingly personalized solutions to their health problems or their journey to wellness. For example, there are companies such as Nestle, which offers a wellness ambassador as a service, which provides customers with personalized nutritional advice based on their dietary habits, DNA, and blood test results. Users upload pictures of the food they eat via the LINE messaging app. Meanwhile, at-home DNA and blood tests assess their vulnerability to common diseases such as high blood pressure and diabetes. The service then provides personalized dietary advice, as well as specially formulated vitamin supplements. And the program costs about $600 US a year. That's pretty insane. You can get so extremely personalized that you can even do your own DNA and blood tests at home and mitigate health risks before they even become an issue, rather than having to go to the doctor to measure your blood pressure or figure out what your DNA will tell you. We can now do that in at-home kits, or we can use things like 23andMe to get a better science level understanding of who we are and what is best for us. The personalization is going deeper than just what we like. It's also what our body says we need that we haven't been able to listen to before. So again, empowering your customers to understand and test and fix every aspect of their experience is very interesting. It takes the customer experience further than something that is easy to use. It also allows them to understand and control the experience that they're having. How do you think your company could do this? Or how do you think your research could inform your company to be able to do something like this? Another example for this is Calibri. Calibri is a British beverage brand partnered with glass packaging manufacturer Beats & Clark to create bottles that let consumers control their sugar levels. The caps contain an agave-based syrup that customers can add to their taste or omit altogether if they prefer a sugar-free beverage. This is something a little bit less hard science-y and more about the absolute control that the consumer now has over their sugar intake, especially when sugar is becoming increasingly spotlighted as such a problem for a lot of people. This allows you to put as much or as little sugar as you want into your drink, which would be very interesting for people who are looking to cut out sugar, but in a more graduated way instead of going from all sugar to no sugar. This drink could be very popular with people who are looking to limit or reduce their sugar, but not necessarily cut it out altogether. Again, allowing people to understand, which is how much sugar they're actually putting into, control how much sugar goes into their drink, test so they can figure out if a little bit is okay or if they want more, and fix it. So if this time they put a little bit too much sugar, next time they'll put in less. Very interesting innovations in this space. There are a few more as well that are highlighted on the Trend Watching article, such as an app that helps you personally reduce the amount of jet lag that you have when you're traveling from one place to another based on your age and your fitness levels, as well as a vaporizer company that limits how much vape you can actually inhale at once by locking itself for 30 seconds after you've inhaled the amount of vapor you've told it you want to. Pretty crazy stuff, and really interesting ways that companies are tackling this issue. We can imagine travelers welcoming an airline or hotel chain offering them time shifters jet lag beating app, the one that I had talked about before, says trendwatching.com. No sector is off limits when it comes to expectations around constant optimization driven by the mainstreaming of the engineering mindset. Everything is just an engineering problem to be solved, and it's no longer out of our hands when it comes to the data or the information that we need to do so. How will you tap that as something that will go into your next insights report? The other trend I'll be talking about is fantasy IRL. Trendwatching.com says, alongside a growing desire to get away from it all, consumers have more channels with which to escape than ever before. Media consumption continues to grow with almost insane levels. American adults spend more than 11 hours a day interacting with media. At the same time, media itself is becoming ever richer and more immersive. 80 million Americans use augmented reality every day. So what does that mean for us? It means that people are able to escape into worlds and also blend virtual worlds with reality in ways that we haven't seen before. And this really impacts how people interact with their everyday lives. At any point, whether a person is at home or stuck in traffic or bored in a meeting, there's a scope to imagine, escape, explore, create, and connect that is pretty much unlimited. And this means that we have to start thinking of ways that we can allow people to escape and maybe fold in a little light escapism into our products if we can. Or at least emulate some of these augmented reality that both solves a need, which might not be super important, but is still something that people seek out every day when they're interacting with different media and products. Especially if your company wants to put out content related to your brand, you could definitely look into this as a potential segue to make you stand out and allow people to come into a world that you've imagined for them instead of them imagining it for themselves. So now there is a few examples of fantasy IRL, and one of them that's pretty great is jeweler Tiffany & Co. leveraging a much-loved movie, Breakfast at Tiffany's, especially by bringing it into the real world for experience-hungry Instagram lovers. So Tiffany & Co. partnered with a bakery in order to bring the Breakfast at Tiffany's breakfast place to life, and it allows people to go in and really have the full experience, but it is, after all the fantasy. Another example is the Louvre made itself relevant to a new generation because they harnessed the power of Beyonce and Jay-Z's music video for Ape, S-H-I-T, in case you have other people listening. Their music video was them standing in front of various pieces of art at the Louvre, and now the Louvre has decided to harness the good old-fashioned audio guide to layer Beyonce and Jay-Z's creative output into the gallery. So it allows people to listen to an audio tour via which pieces were showcased in Beyonce and Jay-Z's video. So people who might not have been interested in art before might go and check this out specifically for the audio tour that has to do with Jay-Z and Beyonce, two extremely well-known and popular cultural icons. These are a few examples of different ways people have done it, but could you imagine other ways that your brand or your company or what you are researching and helping your company create can delve a little bit into the fantastical and the fantasy? I would be very interested to hear, and if you'd like to discuss it, you can definitely check us out on Twitter, on Medium, or you can join us on our Slack channel. These trends are really great because they allow us as UX researchers to not only focus on making great products and providing an exceptional experience, like I said before, but also look at what larger trends we could leverage to bring our experiences to the next level and really make us stand out among the crowd. As McKinsey had said earlier, it's harder and harder for people to showcase how great they are because there is more and more people trying to climb to the top than ever before. So with exceptional experiences that are alongside these trends in 2019 that Trend Watcher has outlined, you and your business could be well on your way to being one of those top performers that McKinsey had found. Have you seen any of these trends emerging, or maybe you are more familiar with the three others that we didn't get to talk about today, which were the legislative brands, open source solutions, and superhuman resources? I love this kind of thing with futurism a little bit coming into play, but also trends that are really actually being shown in the very near future. And even today, as we saw in some of the examples, some people are already leveraging these ideas. So take a look at trendhunting.com at the 5 trends for 2019 to see the 3 other consumer trends and some more examples on the ones that we talked about today. And I'd be curious to know if you saw these coming or not. This episode of the UXR podcast was hosted and produced by Emily Hutnick and edited by Elena Georgic and Ken Konkatong. The UXR podcast is brought to you by the UXR Collective, an organization that aims to provide a platform for UX researchers to build community, share knowledge, and promote their practice in Toronto and beyond. We'd love for you to join us at our UXR conference in June 2019 or at any of our meetups, even our Slack community. Go to uxresearchto.com for more information or find us on Twitter or Medium by searching uxresearchto. The theme for the 2019 conference that is happening in June at Roy Thompson Hall in Toronto, Ontario, is Strive. We're bringing together researchers, designers, and product people for listening, learning, and conversation about UX research. If you're a UX researcher, we want to hear how you strive to break the mold and elevate users' voices. Tell your story at UXR Conference 2019. You can submit a proposal to be a speaker and get your airfare, your hotel for 3 nights paid for, as well as, obviously, a free ticket to the conference. Go to uxresearchto.com and scroll down to Call for Speakers at the bottom. If you'd like more information or you would like to stay connected, definitely email us at hello@uxrcollective.com. If you have feedback for this podcast, you can email communications@uxrcollective.com. And thank you so much, as always, for listening. This is your host, Emily Hutnick, once again, and I hope you will strive to become a better UX researcher.